Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me here today for episode number 360. In just a moment, I'll be sharing with you an interview I did with Joanne Hahn and Karen Hendrickson of the Death Doula Network of British Columbia, and we'll be talking all about creating community for death doulas and also for all of us who work in any aspect of end-of-life care and how important it is to be able to come together in community. So I hope you'll enjoy that interview in just a moment. Before we get there, I need to apologize a little bit for the sound quality on my end during the recording of the interview. I was having problems with my good microphone, so I wasn't able to use it when I recorded that interview. So apologies there that the sound quality isn't as good as I would like it to be, but hopefully you'll be able to hear and understand everything just fine. I also want to thank all of my Patreon supporters this month who are helping to keep the podcast on the air by making contributions at patreon.com/EOLU. I really appreciate all of you. And I'll let you know that coming up, this is a little in advance, but October 13th at 6:30 p.m., Barbara Carnes and I will be doing a presentation for the Death Doula Network of British Columbia, and we'll mention that during this upcoming conversation too, but I just wanted to mention it here. Barbara and I are really looking forward to joining forces and being part of that workshop presentation, October 13th at 6:30 p.m. If you stay tuned here to future episodes, I'll let you know how you could join in virtually and be part of that workshop. So now we'll move on to my interview with Joanne and Karen. And as always, stay tuned afterwards. I'll come back with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm very happy to be welcoming two guests to the podcast, Joanne Hahn and Karen Hendrickson. Joanne is a professional end-of-life doula and death educator. She is a co-founder of the Death Doula Network of British Columbia and also runs her own doula practice called End of Life Alternatives. Joanne also volunteers in community support at hospice and is a therapy clown licensed for laughter and clowning, volunteering with two local groups, visiting residents in care facilities and hospitals. Joanne's passion is people, and she has found her gifts are working with people in palliative care and at end of life. So Joanne, welcome.
Thank you, Karen. It's a pleasure to be here today.
And your partner in crime, or partner in sometimes probably, is Karen Hendrickson, a professional coach in life, death, and grief, and all the messy in between. And she's the co-founder of the Death Doula Network of British Columbia. And we're going to talk a lot about that, the DDNBC. Karen also runs her own practice called Take the Journey Coaching for Success as a licensed Willow EOL educator, which I love. I love that program. Having interviewed Rena and Michelle about that, an end-of-life doula and member of the End-of-Life Doula Association of Canada, the National End-of-Life Doula Alliance, and the International End-of-Life Doula Association. Karen has completed training as a grief and loss support group facilitator, as well as hospice volunteer training, and her volunteer experience includes being an active board member with Threshold Choir. So between the two of you, you represent like so many good organizations that exist out there right now. And you can learn more about their work and the Death Doula Network of British Columbia at the website ddnbc.com. So Joanne and Karen, both of you, welcome.
Thank you, Karen.
So maybe we could start, Karen, with you just telling our audience, what is the Death Doula Network of British Columbia? Give us a little more information about what that's about.
So the Death Doula Network of BC is actually membership network organization that we created just shy of 2 years ago. It will be 2 years in August. And it came to be as a result of COVID and the pandemic. Actually, it was a good thing for us that came out of that pandemic. And our intention with this organization is to be a container to create an opportunity for individuals, whether they're death doulas or they're other types of death care professionals within the realm of death care and community support, who can come together, build relationships, build collectives, and work collaboratively in support of our communities, and to help sort of change the narrative and the disconnect between death being actually an element of our lives that really we can have a much more positive experience with. So really, we really started the container to create this place where, especially for emerging new doulas, so individuals who've taken training and then don't know where to go next, who to connect with, how to actually step into this work or build connections and make things happen for themselves in this arena. And so we opened the door on the Death Doula Network of BC just to create the container to allow that to happen. So we offer monthly education, but more importantly, we have watched relationships build, not just across our province, but across our country, and both within this continent, throughout the US, and in other countries as well, too. So, which, you know, death is universal, and we can all learn and support and do this work together better. That's really what it is for us, yeah.
I wanted to ask you if all your members are from British Columbia, but it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like maybe you're the hub, but you have a pretty big reach from there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, Karen?
Yeah, six countries. We're in six countries. Wow. Right. So we're sort of spread out. The majority of our membership is in Canada and the US, but we are spread out elsewhere as well. And the BC or British Columbia really just comes from the fact that that's where Joanne and I both reside. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Joanne, how did it end up that you and Karen came together and decided to create the DDNBC?
Well, as Karen said, you know, the graduates were coming out of these courses they were taking, and they didn't know where to go. So COVID was really good to us. We started our online program, and we started running almost weekly sessions of what we call death conversation games, and we kind of developed a little bit of a following. And then people started sending questions in. I've done my course. Where do I go now? Who do I turn? Who's out there to help and support us? So Karen and I did a little bit of research, and we couldn't find anything. So we said, well, then we need to make this happen. So that's kind of how it became.
And sure enough, you did. And I've heard a lot of other stories about how COVID was really the instigator in some ways of people deciding, we just need to do this. We need to do it online. We can't come together face to face. So COVID really spurred people to get creative here and figure out solutions to the problems people had.
Yeah. On a personal level for Joanne and I, we've been friends for over 20 years, Joanne and I, but we live in different communities. We're almost four hours apart in relation to the province of BC. And so this actually COVID and the opportunity to do things online was a great opportunity for us personally to do things together, because we didn't have to be in the same place. And so we could marry our friendship and our passion for this work in a way that could go much more broadly than what we could do in our own communities. And we could do it together.
Yeah, and isn't that so true? Like, we discovered that, like, sometimes meetings electronically can actually be really powerful, and you can get a lot done, and you can inspire one another. Mm-hmm. And so we found a whole new way of working together that actually makes it possible, no matter what happens now with COVID. We know we've created networks that are going to last and will outlast this pandemic.
Exactly.
And they're further reaching too than the in-person. We have people from Australia who get up in the middle of their nighttime to attend our workshops sometimes. That would never happen otherwise if we didn't have this, right?
It's just so true. And that creates like this perfect recipe in a way for synergy, when so many different people come together with their ideas and their experiences. And because we're all facing similar issues around the end of life, but every culture and community is experiencing something different in a way. So it's so nice bringing all those pieces and elements together.
Yeah, for sure. It's been good for us.
Yeah, and for your members, I'm sure. About how many members do you have now?
We have just over 200. So we've grown 100 a year. You know, when we were at 1 year, we had 100, and now we're around 200.
How have you spread the word about it? Has it just been word of mouth?
Yeah, predominantly we focus our growth on from an organic perspective, right? So, you know, we are not big promoters of the buying into the whole social media, you know, build out these tens of thousands of followers. It's more about our authentic and heart alignment and intentions. And are we growing our network organically with people who really do align and resonate with what our intentions are? And, you know, we believe that the best referral is somebody who engages with us and then has a really good experience and shares that with others. Right. So we rely on our membership to help us grow our membership. Yeah. It's slower, but it's valuable. Right.
Yeah. So Joanna, I would think that if there were doulas listening to this conversation, it doesn't matter where they've trained or who, you know, who they trained under or what organizations they belong to, they would all be welcome in the Death Doula Network of BC, especially if they're looking for a place to have more connections.
Oh, absolutely, Karen. And they don't even have to be doulas, just people interested in end of life learning. Maybe they want to look into becoming a doula. We have some really wonderful resources on our members page there that they can go back and look at some of our recorded workshops. I think it's a great place to start. Had we had something like this when Karen and I took our course, we wouldn't probably be around today.
Yeah, very interesting.
Well, I'm just going to, I was going to say it's the same role as a doula. A doula is there to fill a need. And so that's what the network is doing. We saw the need. We couldn't find another container, so we created it.
Mm-hmm. I think the important thing to know, too, is that, you know, doulas are a valuable resource in community, but doulas really are more valuable when they've built integrated relationships with others in the death caring communities. So whether that's other modalities of support like Reiki specialists or palliative massage people, or it's funeral providers, or even cemetery owners, things like this, right? There's all kinds of elements that support our death, end of life caring experience. And so as a death doula, we show up way more valuable to those we're in service to when we have these other relationships in behind us that we can recommend or refer or tap into and reach out to for information ourselves and helping how we're going to support those that we're in service to, right? You know, if we all operate in silos, we can provide a decent service. But if we work collectively and tap into the integrated resources that are readily available there, we can do so much more together, mm-hmm. right? And so the network opens this opportunity up where these connections just are happening all the time. We see beautiful, amazing things happen as a result of the connections that have happened within our membership group.
And that's our members doing that. That's them doing that, not us.
Yeah.
What we've done is we've provided an arena for people to come together.
You create the space and then the connections just happen.
Yeah.
Well, Joanne, tell us a little bit about your own journey. You're a professional clown. And what brought you into wanting to be a death doula?
Death doula. My background is in insurance claims. So I've been helping people deal with the loss of their house, the loss of their business, which really is like a death, right? Because they go through the same stages and what have you. But I got tired. And so in December of 2017, I did a telephone session with a psychic. And we're trying to figure out where my path would be better, right? What strengths and all this. And anyways, I'm speaking with her and she goes, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I want you to write this down. Death doula. Hmm. And I went, what? She goes, and on we went. So I get off the phone. I send a note to my friend Karen and said, check this out. I just got told to look into this. And I sent it also to a friend of mine, Jan, and she was in Arizona at the time because they go down there for the for the winter. And so Karen starts sending me these articles. Jan starts sending me these articles, and I'm starting to read it. 2018, my friend Jan got diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer at the beginning. So she decided to come home to Canada and told her husband to stay in Arizona because she had to come home and figure it out first. And so I was able to be there with her, along with another very good friend of ours. So from the beginning of January until she passed in March. And, you know, during this whole journey, Karen and I are going back and forth about this wonderful profession that's speaking to our hearts. And then I took my training was the second week of March 2018. And this is the part that I just love, because we started our training on the Monday, ended it on the Thursday. On the Friday, my friend Jan died by medical assistance.
Wow.
And, you know, there's no coincidences. And she had said to me before that, she said, you have to come and see me every night after your class. I want to know what you learned. And then before she died, she looked at me and she said, you've got to continue this work.
Wow.
So that's kind of how I fell into it.
That's a true calling.
Yeah, I think so.
So Karen, you were, as a friend, like you were there for this part of the journey too, of supplying information to Joanne, but you were also being called at the same time.
Yeah, around the same time. In March, when Joanne was taking her course and supporting Jan, and I was sort of in the back room kind of researching and sharing information and learning from Joanne as well too. I was also in the midst of leaving the insurance industry for the third time. And my intention was to start my independent coaching practice, which I began in September of 2018. And I'd already known through my coaching work in the corporate world that, in fact, oftentimes the blocks or the barriers that people experience actually do come from some degree of loss or grief, right? That's where it comes from. So there seemed to be a correlation, right, in that to me, in those work that would go together. And so in watching Joanne go through some of this process, I decided myself to take the course in the fall of 2018, and just knew that I would align it and marry it in with my coaching practice and make something happen in that way, because I was called to do so. And I called to do so because my friend was, but also too, because it just spoke so much to me in relation to how, you know, we so often wait until there's the terminal diagnosis or somebody that we love dearly is close to death that we all of a sudden get called to do things differently. And so in the coaching world, which is really about making changes for your future, why aren't we marrying that together and just making it happen now? Why aren't we embracing the reality of our mortality now so that we can live and love fully now, right? Not waiting for that diagnosis and before we make those decisions, or not having resources and information ahead of time so that we can live this way now while we are fully well and healthy too.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. I love that because that's a message that really came through to me when I was doing hospice work. My hospice patients were saying, like, I feel more alive now that I know I'm dying than I ever was before. And I'm appreciating every moment of life. And I've been able to bring more joy into my life because I know that it's fleeting and it will end soon. And at first that blew my mind a little bit because it seems almost counterintuitive, until the more I explored that with my patients, the more I realized you're exactly right. When we just embrace our mortality, it completely turns around our perspective and we're able to see life so much more clearly.
Yeah, right. And live it more richly and be more authentic and honest with our people and everything that we experience together, right? I mean, Barbara Carnes talks always about how diagnosis is a gift, right?
Mm-hmm. And wouldn't
because
it be
this
nice?
Is what it calls us, right?
Yeah. And wouldn't it be nice after the diagnosis, if you had all your paperwork done ahead of time? So after diagnosis, you don't have to worry about that. You can actually spend quality time with your loved ones. We just need to shift
yeah.
the mindset.
And it makes me think the diagnosis itself might be less of a shock. If you had already prepared your paperwork knowing things happen. This could happen to me. I want to be prepared for that. It wouldn't be something that you had never, ever thought about before or considered.
Yeah. Yeah. And you wouldn't, I think too, you know, if we were more open on the front end, did our planning, embraced the true mortality that we all face, right? We wouldn't be after diagnosis then trying to play catch up, not just catch up on plans, but catch up on all the should haves, could haves, why didn't I, right? Whatever that looks like for you, right? We don't have to play catch up.
No. You know, it's like Dr. Ruth back in the 1970s. I don't know if you know who that is.
Yes, Chris, yeah.
Right? And she, oh my goodness, she spoke about sex. Oh no. She educated people with humor, but she educated people on a topic that back then was taboo. Fast forward to 2022. I think we're the same spot with death. So we're going to talk about it. We're going to educate. We're going to have a little bit of fun and help people prepare ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. And I think, Joanne, you're the perfect person to bring that idea of adding some humor and fun to this conversation as a therapy clown. So I'm really curious about that, about what do you do as a therapy clown? Tell us more.
I went to clown school. And the training for therapy clowns is very similar to that of hospice, where they teach us about listening and the value of feedback and the value of holding space and not giving advice, but do it with a little bit of lightness. So we were told not to use, you know, the full white face, that less makeup is better, because a lot of people have a phobia against clowns. I get that. My friend Karen there. Right? So I get that. When we put on our clown outfits and walk into a care home, you can just see people just perk up and they look around. There's usually about four or five of us in a group. And they look around, they kind of a little confused. And then we disperse and go around the room. I have these shoes that look like Ronald McDonald shoes. And they're awesome. So I walk into the room and I'll exaggerate, you know, the walk and look like this and pretend to tumble and, you know, what have you. And by the time I get over to somebody, they're kind of looking at me with a little bit of a smile on their face. So I'll pull out a chair and cross my legs and flop those big floppy Ronald shoes and just say, so what do you want to know? And start a conversation.
It sounds to me like part of clowning is actually being able to laugh at yourself and being willing to make yourself the center of a joke and having people laugh with you.
Absolutely it is. You know, and with these big goofy shoes on, I try and tap dance. I can't tap dance to save my life as it is. But with these shoes, and they're always watching. When they watch, I go, I bet you're waiting for me to trip, aren't you? And, they, you know, a little smile, and they go. But to change their day, right, from them sitting there sometimes, and then all of a sudden you can just see them light up. It's incredible.
And Karen, Joanne mentioned that you're afraid of maybe stereotypical clowns, but has Joanne brought you in to her world a little bit?
I have never, ever seen her dressed up as a clown or seen her in her work as a therapy clown, but I have had the honor of participating in being a recipient of her humor for over 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. So Joanne actually has helped me learn personally actually how humor, even in the toughest of circumstances, right, helps us to shift our energy, to release some of the tension that we may carry in those times that could be difficult or hard for us, or some of us may take a little too seriously. You know, serious situations don't have to be completely serious, right? And in fact, if we infuse some humor in that, it actually allows us to shift our energy and to relax a little bit and actually be a little bit more creative and open to what we can do in this tough circumstance. And that's one of the greatest lessons she has taught me over these past 20 years is exactly that, the humor, right? I mean, both of us have faced some very difficult challenges in our life, but it's that element that has really infused from her to me in the value of that. And it's actually because of Joanne that we actually bring this this thread of humor into everything we do within the DDMBC. And it's what our membership and our workshop participants tell us they love, because we show up. We have infuse a little bit of humor, right? We don't, I mean, not from the perspective to being disrespectful about topics and the things that we're trying to achieve together, but just to lighten the load a little bit, right? And it allows, certainly in these heart-centered workshops where we're having people share personal information and stories as part of their self-reflection work, it helps people to relax and release and really actually move forward and gain experiences that they might not have otherwise had if we didn't just sort of lift the lid a little bit to release some of the stress and the tenseness that we might be carrying, right? It's invaluable. It is invaluable for our worst circumstances in life. Humor helps us with that.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, I can see that completely.
Yeah.
I had a doula client that the dad lives close to where I am. The daughters live out of province. And so they hired me to take care of getting rid of all of his contents. And the daughter asked me if I knew a house cleaner. I said, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. Not a problem. She came back to the house where her dad owned and wanted to see me because it was from out of province. And I knew that this was probably going to be the last time they were going to be in this house. So I showed up in my clown outfit. And I knocked on the door, and she just gave me the biggest hug, and she started to cry. She said, oh, my goodness, you have no idea how much I needed this kind of release today. And, you know, like Karen says, it opens communication, it opens openness.
Keeps our hearts open, right? Instead of, you know, our tendency is when we've got the heart pain is to close, right? Right? That infusion of humor keeps our heart open. Mm-hmm. Keeps us vulnerable, and that's what keeps us alive.
Right.
Yeah, so true. And it's sad in our society that at least death and every discussion of death has somehow been relegated to this very dreary, sad perspective in a way. And most of the adjectives you hear around death and dying when people talk about it, it's all just depressing and sad. There's so little joy connected with it. And yet we know when you're actually with someone who's dying, there's a lot of joy, a lot of joy in the room and a lot of humor and happiness there. But our society just does not perceive it that way.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. We're going to change it.
Yeah.
One person at a time. Patch Adams, right? Patch mm-hmm. has been doing this for years and with documented results on how humor helps.
Yeah. So to any therapy clowns out there listening, we need more of you in this movement. Come on in.
Yeah, and
help us with the humor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one thing I mentioned to the two of you before we got started that I guess I'll just bring this up now. I had a conversation with Dr. Ira Byock, who's one of the pioneers here in the U.S. of hospice and palliative care, talking about having genuine concerns about where our hospice movement is headed here in the U.S. because like 2/3 of all hospices now are for-profit. There are venture capital firms buying up hospices as investments and who know nothing about care of people at the end of life. And it feels like hospice itself is under threat. But the one thing that keeps me from being scared or depressed about that keeps me optimistic is the fact that at the same time that's happening, the end-of-life doula movement is blossoming and just surging, and so many people are joining it. And I really feel that our hope lies somewhere there with all the people becoming end-of-life doulas and really going back to this grassroots movement. And so if you guys want to talk a little bit about your thoughts, I know you're in Canada, which is a different situation than we have here in the U.S., but I'd love to share some of your thoughts about that.
I think you know, we certainly don't have private healthcare facilities because our healthcare is socially funded and socially supported. And the majority of our hospices in Canada are also nonprofit organizations, not privately owned entities. There may be some private ones, but there's very few and far between. But it doesn't mean that our healthcare system isn't also suffering from dollars and cents. And, you know, because we are suffering from limited resource, a resource in financial support, but also resource in bodies, because especially over the course of this pandemic, you know, many individuals that have been working in healthcare have chosen to no longer be in the profession. So not take leave, but to no longer be in profession. And so what we're seeing more than ever is these gaps that are created as a result of that, right? So these gaps are the areas where there is opportunity for the death doula movement, if you will, to offer the supports that individuals and families need in these times more than ever. Our hope is that our health authorities will begin to recognize and acknowledge where these gaps are and how we can add value. We are seeing certainly in community, in the general public, you know, as a result of what they've experienced over these past couple of years, there is a little more awareness or a little more thought being given by more individuals than in the past around issues related to healthcare and death. And so wanting to learn more information, wanting to talk more, more open to considering that there are other options, right? And, you know, and we all know somebody who has a story to tell that isn't necessarily a positive story about that healthcare experience. And it's directly a result of, you know, lack of funding, limited resource, no time. Right? You know, maybe the medical element is getting addressed, but no time is getting invested in the emotional and the holistic support that individuals and their loved ones need in these trying, difficult times, right? So it is a huge opportunity. I feel there is a huge opportunity. People are asking more questions. What else can be done? What else? Where else can we utilize resource? Who can we reach out to? Who can help us? And that's our opportunity. So we talk all the time about, you know, we're going to change perspective around this whole idea about death being this dark place. We do it by one conversation at a time, right? You tell people about what you're up to. You encourage people to tell other people. And maybe those that you talk to about your doula work don't necessarily directly today have a need for you, but chances are they probably know somebody who does. Right. And if we open up the conversations in safe and compassionate ways, they will share that information and people will start to look for us more. We're seeing it all the time. You know, it's slow. Yeah. But we're seeing it. Right.
And, you know, I've heard quite often that our doctors typically don't get a lot of end of life training in school. And for some doctors, it's an uncomfortable topic. So they avoid it. But if we can get the patient to the point where they've got their paperwork, they've got the conversations, and then they go to the doctor, well, how great is that going to be? Because we've spent the time up front getting to know them and getting, you know, it's all about the person, and then get them to the doctor where they can deal with it.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, that not only makes it easier for the individual and their people, but it also makes it easier for the doctor.
Absolutely.
So, you know, a client that I worked with had all of her planning in place, was actually intending for a medical assisted death, ended up in hospital before that date in a situation that really couldn't be resolved. Family knew exactly what her wishes were. Physician just had to get in touch with the family member. Family member says, yeah, I know this is okay. If we get there in time, great. If we don't, it's okay too. I know it's what she wanted. Way easier for the physician, way easier for the family. And sadness, yes, that she died, absolutely. But also a bit of peace and ease on the part of the physician, because it was already there. It was already intended. Yep. There was none of this having to have this uncomfortable conversation, because everybody already knew. Right.
Yeah. And I think one big obstacle for physicians is not knowing, how do I bring up this conversation? How do I start it? And when the patient walks in the door saying, I've got papers to show you, I've been working on these, I've been making my plans, like, well, then there's, you know, it's like, it's easy for the physician to move forward from there. They didn't have to bring the topic up. And you guys are empowering the patients to start those conversations with their doctors.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a win-win all the way around. It's just, unfortunately, I know for us in Canada right now, our health authority doesn't acknowledge us. Mm-hmm. So it's, I don't know how many times I've been told personally that we have people that do that already. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you don't. But, you know, I don't get into that discussion with them.
Yeah. The important thing that's not being recognized yet today is that, in fact, by being an intermediary and providing some of that holistic, right, non-medical support in between, we make it actually a bit easier for the healthcare providers and the individuals and their loved ones, mm-hmm. right? Because we're bridging a gap as opposed to, it's not a competition, right? None of this is about competition or it's about enhancing and engaging. I mean, even things as simple as being able to help patients in their self-advocacy and asking questions and getting the information that they need, right? Or helping to mediate conversations between healthcare and patients sometimes is extremely valuable. And it can be so simple and really just be about, you know, family is so wrought with fear about what's going to happen that the communication between healthcare and them isn't really flowing in the way that it should. And so, you know, there's a lot that we can do in the middle ground that helps everybody.
Yeah.
So true. I know one thing I've always witnessed in the medical profession, all of medicine, is that it's very territorial. So everyone wants to hold on to, well, this is what I do. This is my domain. And I think that's one of the challenges everywhere for the doula movement to kind of move in. But as you're saying, you're just filling in gaps that were already there. You're not taking away from what anyone else does. You're trying to add to it to make sure that we aren't letting people fall through the cracks and leaving them suffering when they don't have to be.
Mm-hmm. And we're providing them with different resources that sometimes our physicians don't know about. So Karen, you had a client, right, that got the big binder and you gave her, want to just maybe tell that?
Oh, okay. So I was supporting a mom and her 30-year-old son. He had cancer. And I started supporting them about 7 months before he died. And the health authority had provided her with a book that was about an inch and a half thick that she could read to understand what was going to happen and what to expect over the, you know, final days and hours of his life, what that death was going to look like, the, you know, the typical things. And, you know, when you're fraught with fear about your person dying and how to navigate, you don't have the capacity to read anything like that. And no. So I provided her with Barbara Carnes, Gone From My Sight, right? And it helped her and all of the people involved in his care. Because I just left it there. People perused it as they could. It's simple. It's easy, right? So it's a simple thing in and of itself, right? Just breaking things down in ways that people can receive it and gain some valuable support and information from it so that they can make good decisions, right?
So that blue book from Barbara Cairns is 14 pages versus an inch and a half thick of paper.
Yeah. And I'm sure the health authority book has valuable information, but at that stage of the game, not something that somebody's in the capacity necessarily to be able to absorb. So just different things, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting, the person that gave out that health authority binder had good intentions and knew like this person needs information. Here's how I will provide it. But they don't go to the home with the patient and the family members and they don't see what happens and they never make that connection of, is this the best way to provide information to people in this place in their lives or not? Yeah. And that's why it takes people who've been on the ground, who've been in the home, who've sat with patients and their families to really have a clear vision of what's needed at those times in life.
Yeah. Yeah. What happens in our circumstances is, you know, the health authority has processes and systems in place. And so those working within the systems do what that procedure, that process is. So at this time I give the book, there is no time based on how those as someone working within that organization, your time is so stretched, you don't even have the time to even think about the impact, right? Or what other elements are necessary, because working within the system, you're driven by procedure and process, which has forgotten the patient. Great intention, but it's forgotten the patient.
Yeah. Well, one thing I love about the doula movement is just the potential for creativity, because I know doulas who are educators who primarily, they teach workshops and classes, and we need all the education we can get in every community. But I know doulas who love to sit vigil. I know doulas who come in and teach families hands-on care. And I know doulas who help with home funerals. And I see that just with this doula training, each individual person can take it in any direction that their heart leads them. And we need all of it and more of it. And that, there's something really beautiful about that, that you can be creative with your own doula practice. It can match your own heart and what you feel you're here to bring to the world. And everyone needs it, whatever it is that you offer, it's needed.
Yeah. That's the beauty of a community, though, right? Because I personally will sit vigil, but it's not my favorite. But I have a friend that absolutely loves to do that. I do advanced care planning, she doesn't. So, you know, together, we can work together to fill the needs of the client.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's, you know, for certainly within the DDMBC, this is comes back to two part of the reason why we've created this container, right, of bringing individuals together within the death caring world, is so that, you know, we also tell individuals who've just taken a course or a program who say, I don't, you know, they come with these grandiose thoughts that they have to do everything. And we say, we encourage you to get really clear about what really resonates with you, because that's the work you're going to do exceptionally well. The other stuff that doesn't really resonate with you, build connections and relationships and find others who can do that. Mm-hmm. Because they do it really well. And so then collectively as a team of individuals providing support, right, it will be exceptional because of that. You know, within our network, we have seen individuals build these relationships and collectives within community or even across the country in some cases, because some of this work doesn't have to be done on the ground in support of individuals, where that's made a big difference, right? That's how we do this best, is together.
And that's what the client deserves. They deserve the best.
Yeah. And I would say that's, in some ways, that's one of the big shortcomings of medicine, is that even though like there are medical specialties that will refer to one another and bring in other specialists, but no one is coordinating what they're talking about or offering. No one's overseeing that. Mm-hmm. And the care still ends up being really fragmented. And medicine often misses the idea that the more people you have on your team, the more people, the more varied they are in what they offer, the better the care will be. Mm-hmm. And instead, everyone's trying to prove how valuable the care they offer is, right, and a little bit threatened by the fact that other people work in this area too and offer different things that are equally important. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, medicine is cerebral. It's very intellectual. What we do is heart, totally different, right?
Yeah.
And we want them to talk, the heart and the head, but maybe the heart needs to step forward a little bit more. And then by the time they get to the medical, it's going to be a lot easier for everybody.
Yeah, so true. Mm-hmm. Do you two have a sense that a lot more people are being called to become end-of-life doulas right now? It seems that way to me, that I hear more and more about people who are kind of waking up, or they hear, just hearing the word end-of-life doula, they say, oh, I think that I want to do that and learn about that.
Yeah, that's what happened to me, right? Write this down and check it out.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I actually think that there's lots of reason for it. I think, you know, some of it is there's sort of this kind of awakening that's happening in relation to us recognizing that our current healthcare systems haven't, you know, they have taken care of us and our people from a pure medical perspective, but we've lost something. And so, you know, this sort of renewed idea of what end of life and death and dying can be, because it's not a new idea, it's just a renewed idea, right, is calling and speaking to us. But I also think it even comes down to something even a little bit more deeper, which is just that generally speaking within our lives, there's a gap there that we're missing with relation to this vulnerability and this living in life fully and sort of being more present in our lives and in our world. And so if we're feeling that kind of a gap, this is a great place where we can feel we can align with that. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think it's a bit twofold, you know. I think it's indicative of a couple of things that are happening in the world today.
So through DDNBC, do you offer training for people who want to become end-of-life doulas, or this is more a network for those who have trained elsewhere and come together?
So we provide training from the perspective of monthly workshops. We don't have a program or a course that sort of says this anoints you as being able to be a doula. We don't offer that. What we offer is the opportunity to come to community and build relationship and get to know people, but also learn. And we bring a lot of diverse topics into that realm on a monthly basis. So some of it is very much related to the work of a doula. Sometimes it's about helping people to understand options that are out there so that they can share that information with their others or make better decisions or choices for themselves. So we've covered things like green burials. We've had cemetery owners speak. We've had funeral directors speak. We've all kinds of varying topics. And then we also, you know, for those individuals who are really interested in trying to figure out how to turn this into a business, to become entrepreneurial in this, we bring in some of that business development type training too, right? So some of the, maybe you want to take information out to your local community as an example, right? And give talks at your local senior center or your library. So we've provided some training on how to facilitate and deliver workshops or how to put presentations together. We've got a business 101 workshop that's recorded and sitting in our members resource center. That ties in actually. So our membership is about participating in workshops and being a part of community, but you also have an option to purchase membership that gives you access to coaching, which is all about, and it's a bit of a hybrid coaching because it's coaching and business consulting sort of married together, helping individuals figure out how they want to show up in this work, right? What actually they want to be doing, and then how to actually move forward in creating this and turning this into a business where they're generating some revenue and some income. And so there's a lot, you know, there's a whole a range of sort of what we support them with in that way, because that's a big piece that people are often missing. I've taken this training, that's great, but I've never been an entrepreneur. I don't know anything about being in business. How do I do that?
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And, you know, some of us are able to be volunteers and do the work as a volunteer, but many people, this needs to generate some kind of income for them to sustain the work. And it's really important that we address that. And the same thing happened in hospice. I think hospice got its start as a lot of volunteers coming together, but that volunteer only isn't sustainable for very long. So it's really important that you offer that coaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've seen, you know, over the course of this almost 2 years, we've seen some individuals make some really significant strides as a result of the coaching support that they've received in this process, right, of trying to pull things together for themselves. I think, too, there's a piece that we are kind of missing in this. So, you know, I think within the doula sort of movement, we are seeing a lot of individuals showing up in education to educate other doulas. But we also need to be taking education out into community. And so we can be in service in community, but we also need to be educating the community that we live in, right, about this service and its value and how we can support and the gaps that we can fill. Because as much as understanding and awareness is growing, there's a whole lot more to be done within the local community for those that we would actually be in service to.
Yeah, so, so true. Well, Joanne, do you teach any workshops on humor or bringing humor to your work? I'm just curious.
No, I don't do any workshops. It just comes out sometimes.
You just bring the humor with you to everything.
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, Karen is very, she's accepting most times of whatever pops out.
It's that, you know, to be honest, I think, you know, it's very evident that Joanne and I are really quite different individuals. And, you know, I am very much more on the serious side and Joanne is much more on the lighthearted side. But we know that together, whatever this recipe is, that we didn't consciously try to blend together. It's just how we show up in this space, right? It works. And people respond to it. And we think the key to that really is that we just show up who we are. And, yeah. You know, there's something to be said for authenticity, right? And people, you know, people like that. And I, you know, it's funny to hear you say, do you teach any workshops on humor? I don't know if humor can be taught. I don't know. I mean, I'd love if it could be, but I don't know. Can it? I think you can learn from it, but I don't know how you would teach it. That's a good one to ask you, Joe. You can think about that.
That's a good one, yeah. My favorite part is when I can make Karen laugh so hard she can't talk. And that's happened a few times during the workshops, right?
Yeah.
Even on one of our evaluations, it said, what is it you like about attending our workshops? And somebody put the comedy act.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. But it's good, though.
Yeah, it is. That's really
good. So, so it sounds like this network, it's not just for death doulas and it's not just for people in British Columbia, in spite of the name DDNBC, it's kind of for anyone, like even a podcaster like me, mm-hmm. I could join.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We have the owner of a crystal store is one of our members. You know, and even though she is a doula, she doesn't practice it, but she owns a crystal store. So, you know, our hope is that somebody, say, in my area is looking for a doula. They go in and they find us, and then they go, oh, well, there's the crystal store. Oh, look at that. I got a financial advisor, too. You know, it's almost like one-stop shopping, and it makes it easier for the client to find people that can help them out. Okay. Not saying that they have to go with our members, but it's a place to start.
And we've certainly seen, you know, we've seen members tap into our member directory and make connections and provide services to someone. Like, we've had individuals in Alberta reach out to people in BC and they've provided service collectively together. We've had stories where, you know, a member from Victoria reached out to me and said, hey, Karen, there's a family, you know, near your community who really needs the support and the service. Would you support them? I say yes. I get involved with that family. And by the time things evolve in this, we've got 5 or 6 members who've actually been in service to this family now based on what they do, right? This is the beauty and the true intention of this container that we've created is recognizing how we can make our support much richer together, right? Yeah.
So true. I'd love to see communities like this form everywhere, regional communities where people are coming together around end-of-life issues and sharing their ideas, sharing what they've learned and their expertise with each other because mm-hmm. I feel like that's how we're going to move forward, is working together, not working as individuals in silos.
Yeah. I mean, we say all the time in this work, right? There is no competition. There is enough work for everybody, however you choose to be in this work, right? Whether it's on a volunteer basis or for revenue generation, at the end of the day, guess what? Every single individual on this planet is going to die. There will be enough work for all of us. And if you show up in this space authentically and to do the work that aligns with you, then those individuals will be the individuals that you end up being in service to. The individuals that look to me to provide service aren't the same ones who would look to Joanne, mm-hmm. right? Not because any one of us is any better or worse than the other, but simply because our dynamics are different. Mm-hmm. So if we aren't open to sharing what we know with each other and how to support each other and how to move this forward as individuals and community, then collectively, what we ultimately say we want to achieve, we won't achieve.
No. And we truly believe, and we say this at most of our workshops, we truly believe that together is better.
So true. And I've been interested, I've just been following on social media, there's a course coming up to teach other professionals about grief. And I don't know if you've seen this, but hairstylists and manicurists, like people who in the process of doing their work mm-hmm. end up having clients who are suffering and who may talk about grief or experiences of loss and what they're going through, and trainings for those people, because they need to understand what they're dealing with and that they play a big role in people's lives who are going through all of these experiences. And I just thought, wow, I would love if we had like mini end-of-life doula training for everyone, no matter if you're a cashier at the grocery store, you know, if you've had a little bit of training when someone walks through your line and they're crying or they start to talk to you about what's happening, that you know what to say. And you also know who to recommend or how to connect them with someone else.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think we also need to shift the mindset of people about loss. It's not just about death. It's about the loss of a job. Your best friend moves away. Your dog dies. There are so many losses over our lifetime that we just kind of discount. But really, they compound themselves, and it makes it harder for us to let go. So if we can shift the mindset on loss, so a client comes in to get their hair cut, tells you that they've lost their job, they're grieving, right? And like you say, if we can make them a little bit more aware of that, it would be easier for everybody.
Yeah, and I think that's twofold as well. You know, it's those individuals who are supporting clients or customers on the front end, like the hairstylist or the cashier, but what about employers too? Mm-hmm. You know, employers have a significant gap in from the perspective of leadership training and how to support employees that have experienced loss, whatever that loss might be. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, there's this whole other realm of education and knowledge that we could all benefit from, too.
So true. The huge world of need out there. So
lots to be done.
lots to be done.
Well, we need a community so we can do lots.
So I wanted to ask about the workshops that you teach. Do people have to be a member to access your workshop that is part of the membership?
So if you are a member, you access one workshop a month for free. If you're not a member, you can still join the workshop. It just comes with a fee. So there's a membership registration, or there's a registration fee if you're a non-member.
Okay.
Periodically throughout the year, we do offer some public service workshops that are just general information, but on the regular, a non-member or a member accesses it for free, a non-member but can still join us.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
Workshops for sure.
I know coming up in October, Barbara Carnes and I will be doing a workshop for you together, which I'm really excited about.
Yes,
but
we are.
Do you have other things coming up that you would like to mention?
Sure, we do. What do we have, Jo?
We have some books, person.
Yeah. In July, we have Megan Sheldon of Be Ceremonial, who will be talking to us about how to approach a meaningful ceremony and ritual for at end of life. Megan Sheldon, she's actually done some amazing work within our group and our community over the last couple of weeks, which has been really quite phenomenal with respect to ritual and community. That's Megan Sheldon. That's in July. In August, we've got two of our members, Leslie Buller-Hayes and Roseanne Demers, who will be talking about the invisible threads of grief, connecting our past, present, and future, and sharing information around the value of storytelling. And in September, we have Wendy McAlpine, who will be talking to us about mapping memoirs. And she's a videographer who works on life legacy memoirs, and she's based out of the Okanagan, and we'll be sharing some of her experience and guidance on things that we can do around that. And then, of course, in October, we have yourself and Barbara Carnes joining us for a conversation that we're most excited about as well. Yeah.
Wow, those all sound wonderful. Amazing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, there's so much that we could bring that sometimes we find ourselves, well, we often find ourselves with way too many workshop ideas and content and not enough time, right? We could probably do a workshop every day on something that would be valuable to some people. What we like is we have the opportunity to give these snippets of information in a 2-hour period, and you know, all of our stuff is typically interactive and self-reflective. So we just open up the container, share the information, and then individuals have the opportunity to take away what's meaningful for them.
That's really wonderful. Well, how can listeners learn more and even just join the network if they'd like to?
They can find us at www.ddmbc.com, Death Doula Network of BC. You can search our Facebook page. We're on Instagram. Or you can contact Joanne at joanne@ddmbc.com. Her email's right there on the screen. And we're happy to talk to anybody, answer any questions, or share any information that anybody would like to learn about.
We quite often get inquiries from people. I've just finished my training. I'm interested in becoming a death doula. Where do you suggest I start? Mm-hmm. And so we've got a list of resources. And we say very clearly, we don't recommend one over the other, but here's some resources that you might want to look into. And, you know, at least get them on their way to finding something. And our hope is that because we've replied with some valuable information, they're going to take a second look at us and want to be part of the network. Mm-hmm. So, and if nothing else, then we've hopefully provided somebody with a place to start, which is something that Karen and I never had.
Yeah. I think, and this is the thing, right? You know, we know that the DDMBC isn't for everybody, and that's okay. We believe too that there's, you know, more than one group or association or network that individuals actually really should engage with more than one, because you get different things. Right? We all do things a little bit differently. And the bigger thing is, where are you building relationships? And the more relationships you build, the more effective you can be in this work, right? One of the key things I think that we ourselves don't talk about enough, which is actually really significant value in relation to membership, is access to our members resource center, which is for members only. And that's where we have a ton of resources and information, as well as all of our recorded workshops are available on there from the beginning when we started a year. So there's a lot of information and resource in there that people can tap into as a good place to start for things that they're trying to learn about or figuring out how to support somebody with.
Mm, that's really wonderful. Well, what popped into my mind is no end-of-life doula should be struggling alone and feeling like, I'm all by myself. I'm the only person who in my community who even talks about these things, and I have no support. Like, there's support there if you look for it, and you can find it online and become part of this amazing community.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. We think it's pretty good over here.
Well, you know, and we have people that have come to our we have an open session the first Tuesday of every month called Dishing with the Doulas. And it's just like this. We open it up and people ask questions. There's members, there's non-members, and we just talk. And we've had people go, I didn't realize it'd be okay to find somebody where you could talk about death and it's okay. You know, everybody kind of giggles and like, oh yeah, you're in the right place. And they realize that they are in the right place. They found their people. And that's so important.
Well, Joanne and Karen, you're my people.
Thank you, Karen.
I want to thank you so much for coming here and talking with me about it, taking time out, and then for creating DDNBC, which I think is a huge resource for this community. And I'd love to see more satellite networks forming everywhere.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Well, take care, both of you.
You as well.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Joanne Hahn and Karen Hendrickson of the Death Doula Network of British Columbia. As I mentioned during the interview, I really believe in the power of community and collaboration, and I think it's so important for all of us that we come together with other like-minded people in order to foster the work that all of us are doing. We make each other stronger, we give each other inspiration, we can bring our creativity together synergistically, and I think it's extremely important that we find a place where we fit in and belong, and we find other people that we can share our ideas with. So I would encourage you to search out whatever community might be available for you. Maybe it's in person where you live, or maybe you join the DDNBC in order to have online community. But it's important that we focus on networking and working together to make the end of life better for everyone in our communities. And so I encourage you to take that message to heart and do whatever you can do to find connections for yourself. And I will share in the show notes some links to a couple of other episodes I've done where we've talked about community. One was talking with the Peaceful Presence Project in Oregon about compassionate communities. And then also I did an episode quite a long time ago, but on how to create community as an end-of-life worker. So those will be linked in the show notes for this episode. You can go to eolupodcast.com and look for episode number 360, and you'll find all the show notes there. That's also where you'll find archives of all of the previous episodes I've done for this podcast. So there's a wealth of information there. And if you enjoy content like this, please share it with other people who might also benefit from listening in. Show them how to find the podcast on their podcast app on their phone, or lead them to the show notes page where they can also subscribe to keep abreast of all the new interviews that I'm posting every day. And you can also subscribe to my YouTube channel. Just search for End of Life University on YouTube. And wherever you happen to listen, be sure to leave a rating and a review for the podcast. That's very helpful. If you'd like to offer additional support to this podcast, you can go to my page at eoluniversity.com/support. You'll find three different ways that you can help the podcast. You can buy me a coffee, which is just a small donation for any episode that you find really helpful. You can also make a one-time donation through PayPal, and you can join my page at patreon.com/eolu and become a monthly or annual donor to the podcast, and also receive some bonuses in exchange for that. So until we're together next week, remember, we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of your very precious life. Bye-bye.